G'day everyone, and welcome to the show. And today's guest, now I hope I pronounced this right, is Mark Mavais. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, nailed it. I'm impressed.
And is that all right with the Aussie accent?
It sounds even better.
Cheers for connecting, man. It's really thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. And you're in the UK, so it's about a little bit past nine in the morning, a bit past eight the same day here. So I appreciate you up it early and coming on, mate.
It's no problem. I'm just still awake from yesterday. Normally, I would never get up before noon. You know, Descartes, the philosopher, he never got up before noon. So if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. The only reason I'm awake at this time is because I'm still awake from yesterday.
Well, I'll try not to keep you too long. We'll get you on for a bit. But thanks so much for doing it and staying up. And it's good that you're still coherent.
I'm already in bed. So.
You're all right to go. Now, you've been known for quite a few years now doing different forms of psychic type stuff and telekinesis and just all different types of things. You've got a pretty interesting view on the ET phenomena and cryptozoology and all different types of things where it all comes into a gamut. Would you mind just giving the listeners and the viewers, because I do a radio version of this as well, just a bit of a sort of an overview of how you, like obviously this has been going on for a while for you, but how this sort of started for you in terms of going down this path?
So when I was a child, yeah, you know Sherlock Holmes?
Yep.
I wanted to be like Sherlock Holmes, and you know the way that he walks into a room and he like reads everybody and he says, you know, you got shot in the leg in the war, that's why you walk funny, and all of these different like observations that you could make about people. I wanted to be able to do that. So I started looking at psychology and things like that. And then that sort of segued me down this route into parapsychology and looking at paranormal phenomena and psychic stuff. So then what I started to do was I was looking at all the different famous psychics from history, like Nina Kulagina, Edgar Cayce, Nostradamus, people like that, you know, the big names. Mm-hmm. And it's a technique that's called modeling, where you take what people do that works and apply it to yourself, yeah? So if, for example, you wanted to be the best footballer in the world, what you would do is you would go and you would watch Cristiano Ronaldo and watch Messi and watch all the best players, and you copy the things that they do and apply it to you, and then that would make you better. So it's the same concept as that. What I found studying all of them is that the key is going into a deep trance-like state, you know, in meditation, prayer, hypnosis, however you get there, it's all the same thing. Like, that's the most important thing. And yeah, I've been doing this for years now. Like, it's taken over my life. But it means I get to spend my days chatting to nice Australian chaps like you.
Well, you can't complain with that, can you? But, you know, it is busy. Like, we've talked before the show, and you're very busy like myself. You've always got messages and people to talk to. And this is what you're doing too. You're sharing your information. There's lots of sort of, I guess, tips and tools on how to sort of people enhance and learn about different types of psychic, you know, tools, you know, telekinesis and so forth. So you've got a huge channel and following out there, which, you know, people, there'll be a link underneath this show in the description part, or people that go underneath, or if you're or if you're on the website, there's, you know, the link there as well if you're downloading the audio version. So just go back there. What would you like to go into from here? Because there's so much to cover with you. Just looking at your website and that, you cover so many areas, which I love when you've got this type of thing. But is there anything specifically you would like to go into?
Nothing jumps out at me immediately. There is one question that I have for you.
Yeah.
So I made this video called Alien Races That Have Visited Earth, where I list a few of the alien races that have come here, the Greys, Nordics, Anunnaki, things like that. And one of the things that came up is, my understanding was that the Anunnaki are reptilians. Now, some people in the comments were saying that this is wrong. And who better for me to ask than an expert like you? What's the deal?
Well, recently I found out that one of the beings that I'm into, a race of beings that I'm interacting with, they said that they are the Anunnaki, but it's complicated. So it's not complicated, but it's more complicated than what people are thinking. I'll try and just sum it down, like scale it down the best that I can. And I get this question a fair bit. So you're right and you're not wrong, but it needs to be elaborated. So I believe if we go back to the time of Sumer and around that era, there's lots of reptilian depictions in that, and there are both what I call both beings in service mode and self-service mode. Now, the reptilians that fall into this category, mainly we see as being in self-service mode, but it's not entirely the way. And I found out lately that they've been overshadowed by the Archons. Now, this is where I'll go into trying to put it out the best that I can. And the Archons is still a blanket term as well, because there's many different sort of beings that I've interacted with of a self-serving nature, but they're still a facet of us as well. So this is where everything is interconnected. But there was this race of light blue light beings. They looked humanoid, but they were like a liquid blue light. And first time I got visited by one of these things, and then after that, once or twice, it was two of them, and then there was a whole group that I interacted with, and it continues on and off. Now, what I saw later on too is them manifest from orbs into these beings. So they're like balls of lights, but then they would, I guess you could say, project this image, whether that was through my pineal gland or whether that was in front. To me, it looked like it was in front of me, and I would see reflections on things. But when you're dealing with things at this level of consciousness, which I know we all can be at, it just, that wouldn't matter. But these beings over time said that we would call them Elohim, but that they're not angels, but that's the closest reference, because they said we're not God and we're not angels, but that's sort of the closest things that they could put in human terms for me to understand. Now, recently I found out, and I've talked to James Gilliland and Michael Lee Hill, but I got this information myself as well, was that they are the Anunnaki. But then recently I had an experience where they pulled me up above, some would call an angelic type realm. Like I said, they don't call themselves that, but everything went geometric. And they didn't have eyes or mouths or anything, but they almost, like, they had like geometric wings and like swords, but there was hundreds of thousands of these things. And they said, we are the Anunnaki. Because they started to appear, with this experience, they started to appear as the Elohim, these light blue light beings. And it was like, nah, we're going to show you who we really are. And then they showed me this. So they were geometric, there was no eyes or mouth, but they were humanoid geometric beings. And then they said, we are the Anunnaki. Now, on from that, the Book of Shiji that I wrote lately, which is my first channeled thing, and I was... You know, I just had to go with it. I've been really skeptical about a lot of channelings, and I've been told by people who said when this is being done, just completely take yourself out of it. If you don't understand it, keep going. Now, Shiji was this being I interact with, who's a light being from the star Merope in the Pleiades. Not your normal humanoid that you hear of these Nordics. She's like a light being from a star and a gatekeeper that works with other beings. And she was like, it's been shown to me that the Elohim, Anunnaki, those who once left that physical plane, they're planning to come down to this physical plane, there was something of a type of an addiction to this reality, and their emotions and everything changed. And in religious texts, they would be called the fallen ones, but I hate to put any religious taint on this because it far exceeds that type of thing. So when we talk about the Anunnaki, those who came here, who were once the Elohim and came here and wanted to stay here, and they went in self-service mode, they're also the Anunnaki, but we would know them as the Archons. And I'm trying to put this the best way as I can, encapsulate it the best that I can. So what happened was they wanted to stay in this physical plane, and they had to create an artificial intelligence and an energetic type grid within this solar system to recycle certain souls that were here, basically the souls going back thousands of years when the population was a lot less than it is now, So they could keep coming back here because the energy for them to stay in this vibration has to do with soul type energy. And it's like, it's not feeding them, but it helps them stay here. So if there's certain things that were here at that time when they started the manipulation, it's like they're keeping the energy here the best that they can. And the more things got negative, it fed them. Now, in time to make things easier, the reptilians, which are already introduced here from my understanding, they started to overshadow them. And they used the reptilians as a vehicle. So this is where you're right, because they were the face behind the face of the Anunnaki here. So my understanding from this is what the reptilians were used as a vehicle. I've used this terminology before. It would be like if I got, I'll just say my partner, I got sold to rob a bank. I orchestrated everything and I basically put her in a trance to go and rob the bank. Now, if she gets caught, everyone's going to think she's done it. And then she'll get the blame, but I still pull the strings behind the scene and I can keep on perpetrating doing what I'm doing. So the reptilians have become part of this. So I had an experience a couple of years ago with the reptilian. There was three reptilians and a grey there, and it was Earth, and they were telling me that they can't evolve going the way that they're going, and that they're basically being manipulated, but they're breaking up in the factions now, like within amongst themselves. And it's like as if they can't evolve going the way they are. They can only evolve so much, not just spiritually, but technologically with the same level of consciousness that they're using. So it's like Albert Einstein, from what I got, is how you, to fix a problem or evolve, you need a different level of consciousness to do so. Sorry for going on and on, but I'm just trying to explain the best, because it's not just that, like, and what happens too with the archons, which are behind them, there's many different levels. I've seen ones which look like deformed floating babies that float in the air. I've seen ones that are like black masses. I've come across different types of shadow beings, but I go by the feeling that I get when I interact, you know, whether they're in service mode or not. There's been humanoid type ones, shape-shifting type ones, and then there's the ones that are overshadowing the reptilians. And then the reptilians themselves had been part of this network as well, but at a much lower level than where these guys are, in terms of, I guess you would have a hierarchy when you come into this. But with the archons at the top, the Anunnaki, so there's two factions, I guess you could say. Their makeup, when they went into service mode, see that they originally, from what I understand, going down the realms, they were light blue light beings, but then the higher up you'd go, they would become geometric. Now, they lost that makeup when they came here to do what they've done, and it was more for self-pleasure. So their makeup is different. Some of it looks dark. Some of it's like weird grey sort of skin colours. Like, as I said, there's different types, because there's different levels of how they've evolved. But this is where people wonder why things are the way they are, or how things are like this. And it's because those on both sides have almost got the same level of technology, which, from my opinion, and I've experienced, some of this technology is created by thought. So it's none of this flying saucer and nuts and bolts. It's just nuts and bolts, really, in reality, when we go into consciousness. Because as far as I'm concerned, I've experienced realms that surpass star systems, and they look as visual as HD as these tellies compared to... It's like where I am now, visually, this realm's like a 70s colour TV, and when I've been in these other realms, they're like 2015 HD and almost cartoonish-like, but they're not. And I know people that have taken ayahuasca, and what they've described is what I've seen without it. And then I hear also that the human body produces a lot of DMT, so I'm wondering if my body's been producing a lot. Yeah. So I can, maybe I've been manipulated, or my body just naturally, and when the soul's incarnated, it's like, this is a perfect vehicle for Pete to meet us halfway, or what I perceive as Pete, and we can work with him this way. Because at the same time, in saying that, I'm filming a lot of these crafts, and people are witnessing with me, whether it's the beings or balls of light or crafts, during the day or at night. So this is where I give validity to, as much as somebody like yourself having experiences with the psychic phenomena and everything like that, and you knowing how consciousness works, to somebody that gets the physical component, because I give both just as much validity. But like I was saying before the show, you know, you just got to watch with some people how they get carried away with the gnomes and fairies, which are real as well. It's all about your own reality, but there's got to be a grounding component to it because, like a lot of people have asked me, how do you know what's a positive experience and not? And I sort of go by the fruit of how I evolved from it. But to answer your question, you know, that's the best I could sort of do because it isn't, it's not one answer fits all with that. But I don't know if you've heard of that type of thing before. And this is pretty much good timing to ask me that because I've only learned about this in the last few weeks, about this part of it.
Would it be a good synopsis to say that humans, us, we are earthlings, but to an alien, a dog is an earthling as well? That we've evolved differently. Sure, dogs don't have the technology that we have. But, you know, in the future, things could be different, that multiple life forms can exist on the same planet, you know, that have evolved differently in different ways. That sounds like kind of what you're trying to say.
Yeah, well, It's quite possible, you know, quite possible. I know with some of the beings in the Pleiades, with my memory, which to me is a future memory compared to Earth time, because it shoots off, there's many different races, like Earth-type beings, where you've got blacks and Asians and whites and, you know, the whole gamut, but then there's beings from other races and they do coexist together. I think for that to happen, there had to be a bit of shit throughout the not just the galaxy, but the universe to bring that, but that would be a fair statement. I guess at the same time, like what they'll show me is when I've talked to people about DNA and your DNA can't change, but within DNA there is apparently gears. And one of my mate was a geneticist and he said what the information I'm getting sounds like is if the gears turn on, they don't change, but something changes within, the best way described as gears, and we all get these natural abilities left. And I think if we were at a higher level of consciousness going back to that, we would still have individual aspects of ourselves, but a collective culture where everything is embraced and there wouldn't be, I guess, the ego and the right and wrong sort of mentality that we've got now. Because to go there, we need a different level of consciousness. Everyone wants to work outside themselves, but I believe if we work within and enough of us do it, it sort of wears off on the others around us and it's sort of got like a continuing effect. So, but that's a fair statement you made, I think.
Nice. And yeah, you're totally right. The best way that we are going to change the world is by changing ourselves. Like if everybody made the effort to be better, then the world would be better, like as a result, rather than like trying to make other people better, just be better yourself. It's like Michael Jackson said, isn't it? That if you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change. Like,
yeah, well, that is true. That is true. And in saying that, with what you do, like, we'll say on any of the psychic sort of realm sort of stuff, you would have had to have done a sort of what I would call, if you don't mind me saying, self mastery type work, where learning about your own thoughts. Because I do guide stuff and some of the similar stuff, not exactly the same, but it's more, my problem personally was confidence. How has your journey in terms of you taking the reins on who you are and embracing yourself and working with this, how's this been for you and how's things progressed over time with you doing that?
Well, firstly, when people come to me asking, like, how do you do telekinesis or any other psychic ability, they overlook that. The self-development that you have to do first, like to be in control of yourself, be in control of your emotions and your body. Like I always say to people, like I have a series of buttons and knobs and switches that I've built inside of my brain to control different parts of me. Like so if I am really cold, I will just turn my skin off, like so I don't feel the cold. And, you know, there's all different types of things that you can do, like silence your hunger and all of that things. That's really important. Like, you have to be in control of yourself because if you're not aware of what's going on inside of you, then how are you going to, like, control it? Like, it's obvious. Like, so, you know when you have, like, a feeling inside your body, yeah? That's called, like, a kinesthetic sensation, yeah? My favorite example is, you know when you need to fart, yeah? Like, you kind of feel it, you know that there's a fart coming before it happens, yeah? And then when you need to go for a shit, like, you feel that as well, like, you think, oh, it's time to. But how would you describe that feeling that's inside of you, like, and what's the difference between the two? Like, you don't make that mistake very often. Our bodies are always sending us information saying, I need this. Like, if you, I really fancy an orange, your body's saying, I need vitamin C, or like something like that. It's always going on inside of you. You have to be aware of what's going on. That was, for me, I overlooked that for so long. Like, I was probably about 22, 23 before I started to really notice these things going on. Like, I had a cough. I said to my wife, look, I've got a cough. She said, oh, is it like a tickly cough or a chesty cough? And I was like, I didn't even know there was a difference. Like, because I wasn't aware of, like, what was going on. I've always been really good at thinking, like, that voice inside my head never shuts up, even when I'm meditating. And people say, oh, when you meditate, like, turn that voice off. I just turn off my senses and let that voice go, like, and, you know, it gets all the information from everywhere. And yeah, being in control of what you think really affects what happens inside of your body as well. So, like, people say, oh, think positive. And it really does work. Like, if you was to think of, like, a positive memory from your life, like, your brain releases those chemicals. And if you pretend to laugh, like, your brain still releases the chemicals and you still get the same feelings. And conversely, if you start saying horrible shit about yourself in your head, then you'll start to feel bad. And you know when people teach body language, yeah? They say, like, oh, if a person sits like this, they feel this way. What's interesting is that they say that this is like a sign of the way that the person is feeling, yeah? They feel this way and they're acting this way as a result. But if you adopt that position, then you start to feel that way. Like, so if you're a person who wanted to feel more confident, the trick is just to act more confident, stand more confident, and you feel more confident as a result. Because it's like a two-way street between your body and mind. You have to control one to control the other. It's when you can control both. That's when you've nailed it.
Well, there is, and what I learned too was that I started to see, even through my experiences, I started to learn more about this being as a, like, the, I call it the body computer. And once you start to realize that on another level, and that things work that way, I'll tell you what, since I've been with Solrita, because she does similar stuff to yourself, the thought projection of the reality I want to create through today, I'm going to have a good day no matter fucking what, you know, I have it and it goes sweet, or we get a bill or something and I go, that's nothing, that's going to be paid in no time. And it is, and it's that thought projection of the outcome, already seeing the outcome happening, or treating the outcome as if it's already happened, which will manifest that reality into it. But it's very interesting, like, I saw it within myself too. I wasn't looking at things on the work that people were doing within themselves, with the work they're doing, whether it was psychic work or spiritual, you know, whatever it was, life coach work, doing whatever. And it is a very important point to make, like you said, about the work, you know, people have had to do. So I'm glad we've covered that, because a lot of people just think it's instantaneous. I believe everyone's got the abilities. But it's where you've got to have a balance, I think, in both realms of, you know, the conscious side and the physical side, and breaks, you know. It's just having that, you know, time where you get stuck into it and you don't. With things like that. Have you learnt that a lot of this has got to do with the first thing that comes to mind a lot of the time? Because I've done remote viewing, and I don't do much of it anymore, but if it wasn't for me doing certain types of meditation and remote learning the sort of the government type of remote viewing at the same time, which I don't use anymore, I've surpassed that in another way, but it's similar, I wouldn't be where I am personally today in terms of my development. So have you noticed that there's a lot of this has got to do with the first thing that comes to mind in terms of when you perceive things or trying to get information?
So on the first thing that comes to mind, one of the things that I teach people is that when you're faced with a moral conundrum, like and you're thinking, what should I do in this situation? What's the right thing to do? In that case, the first thing that comes to your mind is always the right thing to do. Because when you ask yourself the question, you know what is right and wrong. And the first thing that comes to your mind is the right thing to do. And what people do is, so they'll have that thought and they think, oh, that sounds hard. And then they think, well, maybe if I just change this little bit, or if I do this little bit differently, like, that'll be easier for me. And easier isn't the right thing. Like, the right thing is the first thing. And as well, to give it that psychic slant, when I'm teaching people to do telepathy, so you get a partner and one person's a sender, the other's a receiver, and you send and receive messages to and from each other, often the first thing that you think of will be the thing that it is. But I always tell people, don't just stop at the first thing. Say every single word that comes into your head. Because what will happen is, if you don't, you'll say, oh, I'll give up. And they'll say, oh, it was potatoes. I thought of potato, didn't say it. Like, so just say everything in a telepathy test.
It is important, and I've taught a lot of people too, with when doing that, when this it comes to a nothingness, either go to another thing. Like, for example, if you're trying to describe, like, somebody sending you a location, you might be able to describe buildings and then it goes blank. Well, then it's like landscape, you know, in terms of greenery or people or whatever, and the weather and, you know, whatever it is. Because what I've noticed too is that the body computer, after a break of that information being sent when you're receiving it, when you have a break, it's the body computer that jumps in and just brings up all sorts of stuff and mucks it all up. Have you experienced something similar like that, or would you say that's sort of what you've got from it?
So when I've done remote viewing experiments, at first, you know, you're getting all these images, and I must stress as well that people get focused on the image side when they're doing remote viewing, when there's, like, much more about it, like, again, look inside your body, there's stuff going on there, and there's colours and smells and, you know, all that sound, like, all those other different things. So, what happens is you get all this initial feeling and you're writing that down, and then what happens is your brain looks at what you've got, and because of the way that we're designed to find patterns and solve problems, you know, we start to look at what we've got and try and draw lines between it and say, and then, oh, maybe this part, this adds both of those things, like, and then, like you said, the brain takes over, like, trying to be too clever for itself, which is one of humanity's greatest problems, trying to be too clever. It reminds me of, there's this experiment that they did where there's two buttons, and one of them blinks 75. Okay, so there's two buttons, and if you press one of them, food comes out, yeah? And 75% of the time, it's, say, the right button, and then 25% of the time it's the left button, yeah? So a human goes into the machine, and they try it a few times, and they work out that this one happens more than the other one. But humans, because they think that they're smart, and we're looking for patterns, and we think that we're cleverer than nature, we'll be going with this one, and then after a few we'll go, I think it's time for this one, like, I think this one's going to come next, and they'll go for that one. And they only end up getting it right about 60% of the time because they choose the one that they know has lower odds, yeah? But if you put a rat into the same experiment, the rat just stands at the 75 button, just pressing that every time. And the rat wins because he's not as smart. He doesn't think that he can beat the machine. That's why humans suck.
Yeah.
And rats rule the world. When humanity is dead, it's going to be the rats that take over. They're going to grow so big. They're going to be like as big as cows. And they're the new dinosaurs, rats are.
They'll be getting on it walking around. Have you done much... I've heard that you may have, because I haven't gone through everything. I've wanted to learn a lot about yourself from you personally. Have you done stuff or experiments with being able to move objects or manipulate objects without touching them through thought?
Yeah, that's what most people like know me for, doing telekinesis things. There's so many videos on my channel like demonstrating this, where you know you focus on an object and are able to move it. So the way I do it, and I use my hands. I don't touch the thing, mm-hmm. but you know, like I don't steer it and guide it with my hands. Some people say that's against the rules. Like I don't know who makes the rules. There's lots of stuff on my channel. Go and check that out. There's going to be a link in the description. The best way to start with doing that is you have to learn about moving energy through your body, like in your body all the time. When you're awake, when you're asleep, there's electricity flowing through there, there's chemical reactions going on, we have loads of energy inside of our body. Some people can see it as well. That's what an aura is. That's the electromagnetic field that we emit because we have electricity flowing through us. Anything that has electricity has magnetism around it. So you learn to control that. You do an exercise I call looping, which is you bring the energy up to here and then back around and pull it through again.
Like so that would be like almost making a torus-type field?
A torus field?
Yeah, like how the energy would come out and then loops back around and comes through your feet and you continuously doing like a loop motion? That's
double loop, that is what you're describing,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, well, like the whole thing, energy throughout the whole energy bands is like just recycling.
Yeah, because what happens is people like do it once and then let that out and, you know, it's just a little bit. But the more that you do it, then the more that energy increases. And then it's just a case of letting it out and projecting it at an object to move it. The way that I do that is, so people spend ages focusing like on the object. The object's not important. Obviously the object is the target, but what we're trying to do is influence the space between us and the target. So like right here in between my hands isn't empty. There's stuff here, there's all atoms floating around, there's bugs that I can't even see, like all in here. And this is what you have to move, not the target. The target is heavy. This stuff is really light. Like, use this to move it. People get so focused on the object and they stare at it. Like, they're going to shit themselves if they keep doing it. Really straining on the object. Not good. You're going to give yourself piles or something.
So, when you're doing it, you're manipulating the space, which I agree, it's not empty. There is so much there. And from what I understand is that even this empty space is made up of different stuff, but still on an atomic or subatomic level, it's just as much valid or anything as myself. So are you getting the energy bands going and then from thought you're manipulating the space between you and the object and then doing whatever you're wanting to do through thought, whether push it or pull it back? Is that how you're going about it?
That's how I do it now. When you start off, there is a more physical kind of element to it. So I teach people to start by like waving at the object, like to create physical air movement. Because it's important to learn how
it's baby steps.
You'd have to know how it moves. I tell people to visualize water. So imagine that you're underwater and you went like that, and then picture the wave that comes off it, and then as you do more, move less and less and less until you're eventually just going bang, and the thing goes flying. Then the hard part is trying to direct stuff, get things up this way. That's really hard. Moving stuff forwards and backwards, the push and the pull, that's easy, but getting stuff off the ground, that's really hard. Even though I haven't that yet. I can do it on small things sometimes when I'm really in the zone, but...
Just shows it's just practice and doing it over and over. And I guess experimenting and doing different methods is sort of what you're guiding yourself to do. Obviously, like you said, you had to start out sort of doing manipulation with air around smaller objects, and now you've built up to where you're doing it, on a different level, and you're able to, now you're trying to levitate stuff and pick it up. And we've seen lots of stuff even coming out of Russia, going back years with, people moving objects within, the glass or plastic cubes and that type of thing. And I've experienced some weird stuff myself, which I wouldn't, if you don't mind me asking you, have you had any weird experiences? Not that, I guess everything's friggin' weird when it comes down to my life, but, and I think anyone's life when they look at it, but have you had any weird experiences with either beings or spirits or anything as you've gone on your development when you started getting connected into this, or even thought telepathy type stuff of something guiding you?
When I was a child, I was about 8 or something like that. I had a poltergeist experience. One day I was on holiday, woke up, I went out of my room to find my mom, and she wasn't there, and I was crying and upset because I'd had a bad dream. That's why I woke up in the first place. And all the doors were slamming and stuff was falling out of cupboards and the room was shaking and all of this stuff. And for years and years, I thought ghost. Then I did some research and I found a difference between ghosts and poltergeists. Poltergeist attack, definitely. But now I'm starting to think that maybe it was a telekinesis thing. Because a lot of poltergeist activity is actually people doing telekinesis without knowing it. Mainly in prepubescent girls. That's a good example of a strange experience. Since I have been doing this, a lot of that paranormally type of thing hasn't happened anywhere near as much as before. I think it's because I want it so bad.
Well, that's what I've learned, even with the crafts and that sort of thing. I've been telling people you've got to let it go, have the interest, but when I let go personally, it just all happens. But it's very interesting you just said that, because I wrote about this in one of my books. I'm not sure which one, but I started having... once my experiences started getting full on with the more interactions in the home with weird stuff and, whatever's going on, I started having stuff which I... wrote that I assumed was me doing it in terms of remote controls move. Now, I admit some of it's high strangeness in terms of, I think beings may have been involved with some of the stuff, but then I think some of it, whether it was remote controls moving or objects being moved or whatever it was, I had thought that it was me doing it through getting in tune with the part of myself that I guess I got in tune with or activated through my experiences. And I think it was because I was thinking outside of everything, you live, you die, you work your ass off, sports on weekend, and that's that's how life should be, because my paradigm broke down. So it's interesting, that's what you've sort of got the take on with that experience when younger, with that type of thing. You cover other stuff, I'm looking at your website now, and look, I recommend people go and check out your YouTube channel. Again, the link's down at the bottom. You've got so many different types of videos and things going on. And the website you've got, it's got extrasensory perception, you've got telepathy, clairvoyance, telekinesis videos, elemental kinesis. That's one thing I haven't heard of. What's elemental kinesis?
So what happens is that we have lots of really fancy Latin words, yeah? Kinesis means movement, and tele means distant, and telekinesis means movement from a distance. And because we have all these great Latin words, people want to use them. So they take pyro and hydro and aero and cosmo and all of these things and create small subsections of telekinesis with it, hydrokinesis, pyrokinesis, which is, you know, moving water, moving fire, moving air. And for me, it's all the same thing. It's all telekinesis, just different names for it. Like, so hydrokinesis is just telekinesis on water. Like, it's just topic is different. The process is exactly the same. But, you know, that's what people want. So that's what we give
them. You give them a label. Well, yeah. Now, that's understandable. What would be your take, if you don't mind me asking, on something like Uri Geller with the spoons and that type of thing? I watched a fascinating documentary lately where he came forward and saying that he worked for Mossad and the CIA, and there was actually a pretty interesting documentary.
Yeah, I think I might have seen the same one. Like, he said,
it's done by a TV station, I think.
Yeah, I think so. One of our TV stations did a Uri Geller thing, and they showed you around his house, and he's got like a car with like loads of spoons on it.
Yeah,
and got like one of those Japanese, like, I can't even do it with my hands, it's like that in his garden, like. And he had a small, he said it was some alien artifact that John Lennon gave.
Yeah. And I've come across that sort of thing with some people, actually, which has blown me away, seeing that when I saw him with it. He's had a lot of flack for stuff, and what's your take on even his method? Like, and I do go with him in some sense with how, you know, I saw him do, like, it was an ad for Kellogg's lately, but it's about people bending spoons, and he's like, you are the spoon. All of a sudden he's thumbed in the spoon, and then he does that thing and he bends it. Have you been able to do anything, or what's your opinion on that type of thing?
So Uri Geller got basically hounded by Randy, you know, James Randy.
Yeah.
Festival debunker. Look, he went out and he didn't ruin Uri Geller. If anything, he made Uri Geller, like,
more
because
famous.
So much press, like, and Uri Geller did the spoon bending thing. Everybody knows that. But like you said, there's so much other stuff that he did, like for governments, and he did some stuff with the Pentagon and the Mexican government and with Mossad and all of that stuff. There's definitely something there. He was tested by Stanford Research Institute as well.
Remote viewing was created.
Experiments and stuff, yeah. So I think that to just box him in as the spoon guy, like, is what the media have done to, like, repress him. Say, oh, you know, oh, that's just that foolish spoon, man. Go away. Like, we don't want you telling people about all these other things that there are.
It's interesting. Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you something I heard somewhere with... Have you ever heard of Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man on the moon?
Yeah.
I heard him on a radio station once, and I'm trying to remind myself the best that I can to tell everyone this, because it's a fascinating story. He met Uri, and I think it was at his the place where Edgar's been doing those conscious studies since he came back from the moon. He started up a facility, I think it was, or a company or whatever that deals with this. And Uri Geller visited, and he asked Uri Geller if he could bring back his... it was either bring back or remote view his camera that he had on the moon when he went to the moon. Now, what nobody knew, and he told Uri afterwards, because Uri couldn't do it. And what Edgar said to him, apparently, from what I remember, was... there's no way he could do it because it was chained to whatever component of the module they left on the moon. So the camera, the reason he couldn't do it was because the thing was friggin' chained there. a little bit later with Yuri's visit, Edgar's asked him if he could find it was a little pendant of the trip that he did to the moon, like a little badge. Anyway, they have an ice cream and all of a sudden blood starts coming out Yuri's mouth and he goes like this, and it's the pendant that Edgar Mitchell had not seen for years and had lost. And he said he was quite taken aback by that, if I remember correctly. So that's some weird, you know, for somebody with that stature as well. And like you said, there's a lot more to Yuri than what people think. I heard that he's great friends with Muhammad Ali as well, which Muhammad Ali was into all this sort of magician type thing, which goes into, have you looked much into the magician type thing in terms of tricks and manipulating it and other forms of how things can be done?
Well, that's one of the things that's really important, like that you have to be able to know how people are deceiving, like doing it the disingenuous way, so that you can establish the difference between what's important information to learn and what should be discarded. Like I was saying about modeling, like if I went and modeled a magician, I wouldn't actually learn anything because he's not using actual techniques. Like that's why, you know, it's important with Kulagina and Nostradamus and people like that, there's evidence that shows that they did these things, and doing the things that they learned are, you know, important. And as well, I am really interested in magic in the witchcraft sense. Like, I'm really trying to find some people out there who know a lot about this, because I want to do some modeling on some witches as well. Like, because I have a theory about an overlap between witchcraft and the law of attraction. Like, so a lot of spells work. Like, you write something down, you fold it up, and I don't know, set fire to it or bury it or, you know, do some kind of ceremonial thing with it, and then that thing, like, comes to you. Which sounds a lot like the law of attraction to me, and like, that, yeah, decide this is what I want, like, make some kind of commitment to it, and then, you know, that thing comes to you. So if anyone watching is a witch or warlock or practices black magic or anything like that, come and hit me up. Like, and
we'll, all right, yeah, yeah. Check. But that's an interesting take on what you're saying, because my thoughts on those types of things is, you know, I think it has got a law of attraction component to it, and I think a lot of it's just esoteric knowledge that when the knowledge of this was being pulled out of the public eye going back thousands of years, only a few who had access to this to learn and know about this knowledge were left with it. But it's almost like my theory with crystals and that, I believe crystals have abilities and powers, but I believe what they are is a tool to assist you until you can do it on your own two feet without it relying on something else, once we get down to a deeper connection with, I guess, our higher self or our consciousness, where we can do things by thought without it. It's like you hear about a lot of programming with crystals. So what people do is they program the crystal to help it help them in a certain way, when really what they don't think of is they gave that crystal the power to help them in whatever way. Do you know what I mean? So it's almost like it's themselves that have projected or manifested that crystal to help in a way, which really that power came from them in the first place. Like, I've used crystals before and that type of thing, but I believe it's more like if, you know, somebody loses their crystal, they're like, oh, my power's gone. And it's like, no, that was just there to help assist you and guide you till you get on your own two feet. But I do know a few people into that circling in sort of witchcraft, and you hear about these black magicians, you know, and warlocks and all different types of things. But would you have a similar take on the way how people use crystals and that sort of thing, that it's really them giving the whatever the object is, the power?
One of the examples that I use, which is related to the point that you are making, not crystals per se, but so when people use tools to do psychic feats, you know, if they use a pendulum or a Ouija board or some dowsing rods or something like that, that is a tool. What people tell you is like, oh, you know, the spirits will interact with the tool and give you a message of some kind. But what it is there is a thing that's called the ideomotor response, yeah? Which is that when you are thinking of something, it has an effect in your body and micro muscle movements happen. So in the case of the Ouija board, you're thinking, oh, I hope that it's H.G. Wells, and you're slowly, not consciously, pushing it towards the H and the G and all of those things. So then people say, oh, ideomotor response, it's fake. Job done, we've solved it. But what I think is that it's the subconscious that does it, yeah, that's in control of the ideomotor response. That means, all that means is your subconscious is what's guiding it. And I believe that the subconscious is what we use to tap into all of this infinite information that's around. And, you know, that it is literally working as a conduit for you to take this information and put it through the tool. So in that case, it's not the tool that has the power. It comes from you. It comes from here, but, you know, it comes from through you. And it's you that are doing the thing, not the tool itself.
With that sort of thinking, have you been able to do that yourself in terms of practically tap into all that is, I guess, part of reality or universe, and not predictions, but sort of see things or have experiences that way or foretell things through that type of method of what you're talking about?
Well, I have visions like all the time, usually stuff that's really irrelevant and pointless, like I think everybody does.
Yeah.
And what people think is, well, a lot of people don't know that they're thinking. That's one of the reasons why self-mastery is so important. And then people who do know about how their mind works and what they're thinking about will just dismiss it as, you know, it's my imagination. And then when a thing happens, it was a coincidence. Even there's this awesome quote that in maths, when we say that two shapes coincide, that means that they fit together perfectly, like, and they tessellate, they fit together perfectly. And the word coincidence, which comes from the word coincide, means that, like, all the factors and variables fitted together perfectly for this moment to happen. It doesn't mean that it's random. It just means that events came together perfectly in that moment. I've forgotten where I was going now with that confidence, with that coincidence quote. So people dismiss the visions that they have, but, you know, it's there all the time, especially in dreams. Like, when we're dreaming, all of our senses are turned off. And when our senses are turned off, you know, we can think so much faster. Like, in every second, we take in 11 million pieces of information, and you have to filter that through, like, your memories and emotions and stuff, and take out what's not important, discard that. Now, when you go to sleep, like, your subconscious goes back through all the information that it gathered through the day, starts pulling things together, saying, this part goes with this part, and, oh, I didn't see that earlier, but that fits with this as well. And this all happens subconsciously. Most people wake up and they don't even remember their dreams. They say, oh, I didn't have a dream. They did. They just don't remember it. And then the next day, they'll see a person and they'll have like a bad feeling inside them, one of those kinesthetic sensations, and they won't know why, but they feel bad about this person. And it's because, like, some information that they put together subconsciously in their sleep, you know, is coming to fruition now. And then something bad happens involving that person, and they ignore the feeling that they had. They don't put those two things together. And, you know, all the information was there. They knew that bad thing was going to happen. They got a warning from inside of them and just ignored it.
That's a very interesting take on that. And, it's got me thinking. It's just like how, like, for myself personally, I tell people to think of their thoughts. Think about their thoughts. Where is it coming from? What's it saying? Because a lot of these times, like, from my experience, is how I'm being communicated with whether it's my higher self or what people want, whatever people want to call it, or other beings, or getting information about certain things, I guess how to go about things. And it's like how I've said to people where all day they could be working on something and they cannot fix whatever that frigging problem is, and then they go and have a beer or a coffee or dinner and bang, the answer comes through. And it's like as if they're out of their mind enough and they've let go, that what they've been seeking because they've been trying too hard is just filtered through. And sometimes that could be something else giving you the answer, or your higher self, whatever people want to say it is. But it's really important, because it's people should really think about their thoughts, because we're being communicated with and got a dialogue going on that people don't even think of their thoughts. And then when they realize how telepathy and how communication works on this level, they go, shit, I've been doing this all the time that I've been so docile not even to recognize it. And I don't blame them, I guess, because of the education and the programming that we've been brought into. But, you know, it's very important. And this is where it's been interesting talking to you, because you look at the thoughts, and not only just the thoughts, which I've thought about, but not really in detail like you, in terms of how things can manifest physically. You know, like you're saying about the gut sensation, that type of thing, like people would say gut feeling or whatever. It's been a very interesting take on that. And it's got me thinking, going, geez, you know, I think, you know, you pretty much hit it on the head with a lot of this. What other things do you cover besides, like, the psychic aspect and, I guess, telekinesis, you know, like moving objects and all that? With your videos, with people, what they can go and check out, because we're going to wrap this up in a few minutes. What are some of the other things that you do cover with what you do?
Well, there is all the ESP stuff, the extrasensory perception, which is the telepathy, clairvoyance, precognition, and telekinesis, all of that all bundled together. Then we look at alien stuff all the time. That's something that really interests me. We have some odd specials on cryptozoology. But for me, my favorite thing is teaching people about thinking. Because like I said, people walk through their lives completely blind to it. And that blows my mind, like, how, because everybody has that voice talking to them inside their head, and it's like,
right from wrong,
you're not listening to it, like, it's there, that is you, like, that's as much you as this is you, like, and, like, I'm so aware of what I'm thinking, that one time, I was coming home, I put my key in the door, I looked through the little window, and I thought, why is there a car in my hallway? And then I realized that it was just a reflection of the car behind me in the window. But for that to happen, yeah, for you to notice a reflection, first you have to see the image, and then your brain processes, no, it's a reflection. And I'm so fast at, like, and aware of the thoughts that are going on, that I caught it at before even it's a reflection. So that's really important. And to go back to what you were saying just about taking a break, like when you're stuck with a problem, there's a classic example of the mathematician Archimedes, you know? And he was given a task from the king of Greece or something, and he had to determine whether a crown was made of solid gold or whether it was just gold-plated. And then he spent, like, so long trying to work it out, and he was getting really stressed out, and he wasn't sleeping, he wasn't eating, and all of that stuff. And then his wife said to him, like, oh, just forget about it, like, just relax, like, go and have a bath, just calm down. And then he got in the bath, and then as he stepped in, like, he saw the way that the water came up, and realised that volume equals density, and then he famously shouts, Eureka, and runs through the street naked. That's a great example of when you stop thinking about the thing, sometimes then the answer can come to you.
I think that's pretty much what happened. When you were saying this, I was remembering an episode of The Big Bang Theory with Sheldon. He's gone to get a job to work with Penny, though he wasn't getting paid the mop, because there was some famous dude, which I think was the same dude you're talking about, because it's like, if I get out of that zone, I'm going to come up with, you know, the answer to this equation. So he's doing something differently to get out of that frame pattern. I think that's important. But you cover so much, which is great. Now, again, there's going to be a link at the bottom of this video where people can go and find out more about yourself and see what you do. And I must say, what's great, seeing what I have seen of yourself and the videos and that, is you're very grounded and you're very logical, and you look at... You're a skeptical in a good way, and I love skeptics because I am too in a lot of what I do, because I think you need to look at things leveled. You know, people are either on this side or that side, and I don't have time for debunkers, but people where they're trying to come to some truth and understanding and learn for themselves, I think you need to have a good balance of both, you know, for and against, and look at things logically. And you do that with a lot of what you've done for, you know, I've only looked at a speck of what you do, which is I've spent a few hours, but that's something great and refreshing to see that in this field. And a lot of people I do have on the show are like that. I won't say all, but I will say a lot of people that I do have on, and it gives me more hope of where we are going in a direction, because it's not like you're just pulling this out of the bloody ethereal zone of the atmosphere, you know, any of this. You're exploring, you're trying different things, and you're researching. So it would be great. Now, you said on Kelly's show, once you get 5,000 views, you'll come back on. Will you do the same for me?
That's a fair deal. I'm happy with that. That's fair dinkum.
Fair dinkum, mate. Well, look, Mark, I'll wrap it up there. I better go, but look, thank you so much for taking the time. I've really enjoyed our chat, and thank you for connecting. And Soul loves what you do, and like Kelly, you know, they both love what you do, and she's always watching out for what you're doing and sitting there on the bed with the laptop and looking through what you've got going on. So keep up the great work, and I'll be checking some more of your stuff out. But thank you so much, mate.
It's cool. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you for having me, and I will see you next time.
Definitely. We'll keep in touch.
Yeah, man.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Adios.